Hey, welcome back to Amazing FBA, the place to be if you are looking to sell on Amazon in the USA, or if you are indeed trying to sell in the UK, but we are focused on the USA. It's primarily based for UK sellers, but also we have quite a lot of US sellers. So if you're in California, for some reason, they seem to be the most listeners in the USA. Welcome back. If you're in Australia, g'day. And if you're in India, hello as well. And welcome back to the podcast. There's a couple of listeners in Germany as well, and a few spread around Europe as well. So welcome back to the podcast. Today is part of Procurement Mistakes and Solutions. That's what we're going to be discussing, or sourcing errors. Before we get into that, I just want to say welcome back. If you want to join in with our Facebook group now, we're just north of 60 members and growing by, you know, a couple of people a day almost. So it's very gentle growth, but it's continuous. So it's a good size group, enough interaction going on for it to be interesting, but you know, small enough for me to get in there and answer one-to-one questions if needed. And you can get into that by just going to www.amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book, unsurprisingly. The latest video on how to create an email list has just been created about a week ago. That's been available for the Insider Secrets Club. If you want to join that, just go to amazingfba.com/welcome and you just give your email address and that's it. I neither sell to that list nor have I any intention of doing so. And this podcast is free as well. So don't worry, you're not going to get spammed to high heaven, but I want to, you know, stay in contact with people. So that's one reason that I want your email address. And in return, you get to look at videos of sort of screenshots, if you like, rather than just me talking about things, which can be very helpful with something as technical as setting up an email list. I also did an episode of the podcast recently. That's episode 17. So to get that and the show notes, go to www.amazingfba.com/17. And last and not least, we have the iTunes review contest, which is on until the end of November, or the first 25 reviews, whichever comes first. So far, we haven't hit the 25, but we're getting quite close now. There's an over £50. There's a £50 Amazon voucher up for grabs if you win the contest. If you're struggling with that, then I will at some point put some instructions on the blog on how to do that. So go to amazingfba.com and search on the menu bar for how to leave an iTunes review. But I have to say, guys, it's now 30th of October. I'm not going to get around to this until early November now, because I'm about to go abroad for a little holiday. So forgive me not doing that. Okay, today we're going to deal with a few common problems that people have in the sourcing of products, and I'm going to deal with the entire supply chain. Today we're going to deal, though, with some very immediate issues which I've recently had. So let's get started with the detail. Okay, so the first area I'd like to deal with is the financial side of things. First thing I would say is that you shouldn't risk money without due diligence. Now, that isn't something that I've personally come a cropper on. I've been okay. I've been partly lucky in not being defrauded, and most people aren't going to be defrauded most of the time in life. So let's keep things in proportion. So nevertheless, so I think, like, in a way, one of the first errors that people make in dealing with China is excessive fear of fraud, okay? Because, you know, even in its worst days, Alibaba, which was kind of a center for fraud for a while for Chinese mock suppliers, was about 1% fraud level if they weren't gold suppliers. And now that's not good, but that's only a 1 in 100 chance of getting scammed. And that's, you know, if you're risking several thousand dollars, that's not probably wise. But the chances of you getting in a car and coming out unscathed, you know, aren't that incredibly much higher. If you drive a lot, for example, most of us are prepared to get in a car if we drive, and I'd imagine the majority of listeners do. And, you know, quite a percentage of us will have some form of accident. I've written off 2 cars in my life, and that sounds like a massively irresponsible idiot, but sometimes I'm sure that I have been. But the 2 times that I actually wrote the car off, one time I was overtaking a bus in a rather narrow place, but pretty slow speed. I was probably going 15 miles an hour. The second time I was going under the speed limit on a motorway, the good stopping distance behind a van, and it stopped very suddenly for no apparent reason. There wasn't even heavy traffic. The woman just made a mistake, and she was very tearful and apologetic, but my car was in bits. So those were times when I was driving, I would say, within the law and within common sense. So you never know with driving. So look, put it in proportion. If you come back to then, you know, this, you're not risking your life here. You might be risking some money. If you're risking your life savings, if you have only £5,000 to your name, you're putting all of it into one product, then that's just foolishness. Forgive me. Don't do that. Don't do that. Right? Even Donald Trump, he's one of the most aggressive business people I can think of. And by the way, he's no hero of mine. I know he's very wealthy, but he's not a hero. But anyway, if he is a hero of yours, then okay, fine. I'm not going to get into that. But I would say even he is one of the most aggressive but successful business people I can think of, said that you should never risk a deal which is going to wipe you out if it goes south. So in other words, basically don't risk everything on one deal. So if you've only got £5,000 in your life savings, then okay, don't spend more than a few hundred on your first Amazon order, is my advice. No more than 1,000. I mean, you've got to have money in the bank for a rainy day, in my opinion. And that's a personal decision, but you know, so put it in proportion. Okay. That being said, you should take all due diligence and precautions that you can. So when it comes to payment methods, the simplest and the most secure for you is probably PayPal. It's quick, it's pretty much instant. It will cost your supplier about 4% if you use their sort of buyer protection thing. Be aware that, as far as I know from PayPal's terms and conditions, and if you want to double check with them personally, then go to their website or give them a ring, because I don't work for PayPal and I am not a lawyer and this is not legal advice. But having said all that, PayPal does basically say if you're paying for something split over two payments, they don't actually offer you buyer protection. Now, that's something, as I say, you need to check. But if you're buying a sort of smallish amount up front, then you can probably pay in one shot and that will buy you buyer protection. Okay, if it's going to cost your supplier 4%, then I would offer to split the cost with them if they're reluctant. And if they're really reluctant, then I would just pay that 4% up front myself, because it's a kind of insurance policy against fraud. Okay. The next method of payment, the next most secure way of doing it, is escrow. Now, that's actually really, really secure. And basically, escrow, if you haven't come across the concept, basically means this, that a third party would be involved, and Alibaba will offer this service, for example, and you would send money to them. They would hold it and they would not pass it on to the supplier. And then the supplier would pass on goods to them. And it's only when the third party has checked that both the money is there, so the supplier is not getting defrauded, and the goods are there in good quality so that you're not getting defrauded, that process goes through. That isn't something I've personally done, so I can't speak from any further experience about that. If you want to look into that, you could go to the Facebook group and see if anyone else has used escrow and what their experiences are. That would be my advice. So it's www.amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. Okay, now another method I've used is so-called TT, or telegraphic transfer, or direct wire transfer, or bank transfer. A lot of people have a lot of fear around this, and okay, if you've done no due diligence on your supplier, you should do. But if by this stage you've gone back and forth, you've checked out the company, they've sent you samples, then I think it's worthwhile to take a risk. Now, if you don't want to take a big risk, my advice is use PayPal and order 100 units unbranded, or whatever the cost is. You know, say it's $2 a unit. You know, if the units cost $10 each, I'll order 10 units, you know. But, you know, get them and check their reel and get them selling. That's, by the way, quite a wise thing to do anyway. So basically, you're starting with a test marketing of the product, but you're also kind of testing the supplier, which includes their honesty. Okay, so you're risking a lot less money up front. If you insist on going in with a bigger order up front and private labeling, I certainly did that, then you're going to have to split it into two payments and you're going to take a certain amount of a risk. Okay, so just start with small. Once you've done your due diligence, sometimes there's no magic way around this, then start giving the 30% deposit, as is the traditional way, via telegraphic transfer, and then get them to send you pictures and any other form of proof that you can, that they produce the product and that it is the right one and that it looks good. Make sure you get it inspected by somebody, and we've talked about that as well. And if you don't have any inspection services to hand, you can use Alibaba.com and various other places as well, which will actually offer the possibility of inspection. And then make your payment of the 70% balance contingent on the inspection and everything else. So at least if you have been defrauded at that point, some third party will come in and can tell you that actually there's nothing in the warehouse at all and you've been ripped off, but at least you've lost only 30% deposit rather than 70%. My experience is that that's pretty unlikely. In the community of, say, several thousand people that I've been in ASM with sellers doing that, I've only come across one or two stories of fraud. So, you know, maybe it's like a 1 in 1,000 chance of it happening. Maybe it's like 1, 2 or 3 in 1,000. But as I said, you've got to put this in proportion, guys. You know, don't risk massive money up front. If you have £5,000 to your name, then don't put more than, say, maximum £1,000 into the business to start with, and make sure you don't ever invest money you can't afford to lose. If you need it to pay the rent this month, guys, don't invest. If you're in that situation, you are not in a position to go ahead and invest in a private label business. Do retail arbitrage, get a day job, get a side job, you know, teach piano as in my case, or, you know, go and do some gardening work for somebody, do some odd jobs, do a cleaning job, whatever it is, you know. If you're in that situation, then no amount of due diligence will account for the fact that you shouldn't be spending money that you can't afford to lose. End of lecture, but I hope that makes sense. So, yeah, don't go in without thinking it through, but equally, don't be excessively afraid of fraud, okay? Don't assume that all the bad horror stories are going to happen to you, and don't invest money you can't afford to lose. So that's my take on the financial side. Yeah, and sorry this is ending up quite a long list, but actually there are quite a lot of things, and as I say, most of this is from my own experience, so this is quite a lot of nitty-gritty detail that you have to get right with suppliers. So I'll try and wrap this up as quick as I can. So the other things are specific errors and then a sort of mentality error. I think I just talk about the mentality error, which is being too perfectionist and too scared, which is all related to what we were just saying. If you're too perfectionist about the product being the best thing since sliced bread, if there is a gap between supply and demand that you can fill and make a profit in, I would move fast. Differentiating your product is good, but then everybody on Amazon is going to pile in if they see that, and your product may not stay differentiated for long. There is a strong element here of spotting an opportunity and leaping on it quickly before anybody else does. And actually, that's probably in this business model more important than anything else. The idea that you're going to build a long-term business with each product. Now, there's a difference between long-term business and long-term product life. The idea that you're going to build a product which is going to stay safe against the competition and which is going to be profitable for the next 2, 3, 5 years, I think is a myth, right? Now, that might be possible for certain types of very unique products, okay? But most of my experience, and certainly experience of other people I've spoken to with some very, very successful sellers on Amazon, is that there is a certain shelf life for a product after which the competition spots that you're making money with it and, of course, goes and finds something similar and sells it. That drives up the cost of advertising, so that shoves down your profit margin, and it also drives down the price you can command for it because you get into price wars. So I would say that you should fully anticipate having to get many products, new products, online as often as possible. So there is an element to which you don't want to be too perfectionist about each individual product. The quality needs to be good enough for you to sell it at a certain price point. If it isn't, forget it. If it is, then assess whether, you know, there is enough differentiation for you to be able to sell it at a reasonable price point. And if you can, go ahead. If not, then forget it. But don't spend so much time being perfectionist that you go round and round in circles, get the most perfect product, which time 6 months down the line, and it could be as long as that if you're a perfectionist. Trust me, I did that with my first product. The competition's ramped up and they're selling the exact same damn product as you, but they've got established, they've got loads more reviews, and, you know, they're outspending you on pay-per-click. And guess what? You know, you're not going to get into that market anymore, even though it was a good idea 6 months ago. The internet moves fast. You've got to adjust to that speed. So over-perfectionism is, you know, is the death to your business as well. So there's a balance to be struck. And exactly where that balance lies is a very personal thing. But that's something just to be aware of as a general error. Okay, last very specific things. First of all, FNSKU codes. Make sure when you get that barcode, so you go to... I think it's send replenish inventory, and you get the barcode to send to your supplier, that they are precise about which barcode is on which product packaging. And again, this is probably not an issue unless you've either explored the possibility of two different product types or you have two variations of a product. If you have two variations of a product, for example, one with a gloss finish and one with a satin finish, as I do with one of my products that have got a plastic finish, then be really, really, really clear about which product goes in which box. If you send the wrong box to Amazon, they are all hell is going to break loose, and they will spend weeks potentially, you know, sorting the mess out. And in the meantime, they might ask you to do something like send it back to your warehouse. Guess how I know this, guys? I've made this mistake. If that happens to you, then just keep fighting for the fact that common sense says they just need to repackage or relabel the boxes. If you send something in with the wrong barcode on the back, then they just need to relabel it and they'll charge you 20 cents. Per unit in Amazon.com. Another possibility that you could get wrong, which I haven't done yet, but I've narrowly avoided by catching it in time, is that I sell one product in the USA and an identical product in the UK, except that, of course, it's in the UK, so the FNSKU code is different. Just make sure your supplier is totally clear. And again, it comes down to crystal clear communication with your supplier. Make sure they don't work on any assumptions like, oh, it's Mike. Oh, he just wants the black silicon spatula. I'll put it in this box. Well, no, because they've all gone to the USA before. Now I want them to come to the UK. So that actually makes sure you're totally crystal clear and make sure you double check everything every time. Get a paperwork trail every time. Get a pro forma invoice before a commercial invoice goes out, which gets stuck on the boxes and gets taken away by DHL. Once you're at that stage, you're kind of in trouble. So check it beforehand, okay? So we talked about address errors as well, going to the wrong continent. I know this sounds implausible, but trust me, it's actually happened. And so, you know, clear communication is the whole thing. We talked about customs errors. I mean, basically that happens from not getting the, not nailing them down as to the exact, the exact carrier. So I'm just making that here as well to put on the show notes. Good. Then the next error is quite a way down the line when you've got your product in and live and it's actually been selling, which is fantastic. My error is not reordering products soon enough. It's a really bad idea to run out of inventory from the point of view of ranking, because you spend so much time and energy and effort to get your product to rank on Amazon. And then if it disappears out of inventory, it will drop off the radar completely. Now, in my experience, you can get it to re-rank better again once you get back into inventory. So it's not the end of the world, but it is a bad thing. First of all, that gives you your competition time to take over that space, especially if they spotted that you've been selling a successful product and you make way, you know, graciously for them to take that space over. That's really dumb. You've kind of laid the groundwork that they're then going to benefit from. The other thing is that Amazon doesn't like it, and it will cause you to rank less well than you would have done if you hadn't run out of product. Now, it can happen, and if you're going for a little test order of, say, 100 units, $2 each, whatever, then you're likely to run out. That's okay. That's a part of the test, okay? That's the price you pay for not risking much money up front. But once you're onto serious orders of, say, 500 units, I should say, of a $2 product, which is more or less what I've got with my first product, product number one, shall we say, then you make sure you reorder early enough. And when I say early enough, again, let's talk about the supply chain. Don't assume that because your manufacturer says they can get it manufactured in 3 weeks and then shipped over to the USA in one, that you're going to have it with you in Amazon in 4 weeks. First of all, the supplier could well have their supplier be late supplying boxes or whatever, or they ran out of raw materials or whatever, random things, typhoon, God knows what. So I would say if they give you 3 weeks, allow at least 4, and if you're really going to be realistic, 5, and then getting things across to Amazon, as I said, typhoon, God knows what can happen with that. So instead of 6 days, it could be, 2 weeks. And then don't assume that it's going to go sailing through customs, even if you've got UPS or DHL or whoever doing it, because sometimes there's a random delay of a few days. I've had that in my last shipment to the USA, no particular reason. I contacted DHL, and by the time I contacted them, they said, well, now it's gone through. It's okay, it's dealt with. So it wasn't that it was something that I needed to do. It's just somehow a random delay occurred while somebody, some official somewhere, checked with another official who was on holiday for 2 days. You know, things happen. And then finally, when it gets to Amazon, don't assume that things will be problem free. For example, you could end up going to hazmat, which is if you got something with batteries in, they call it hazardous materials. And I don't know what happens. The clacks and sirens go off and men in suits come running in, and they, in nuclear radiation suits. And, I'm kidding. Obviously, it's not like that, but I visualize that each time. But they do kind of overreact sometimes at Amazon to an extraordinary degree. So if you think it's going to take 4 weeks, and worst case scenario, it could take 8, right? Medium scenario, if you like, it could take 6. So I would say you need to do simply work out how many orders you've had over the last 30 days, work out how many orders you've had over the last 7 days, and then just work out how many units you're getting through a week. Look at the number of units you've got left and see how many weeks of inventory you've got left. Amazon will do this for you, but I think it doesn't do any harm to take 2 minutes with a calculator. For example, if you've got 300 units left, and in the last 7 days you've sold 30 units, then you've got about 10 weeks worth left. Bearing in mind seasonal variations, if you're coming into Christmas, you're going to find that in November things start to take off, hopefully, and early December they go nuts. So if that's going to happen, then don't be unreal about that. So, allow a margin for error. So if you have, for example, 300 units of inventory left, you have been selling in the last 7 days, say 60 units, but it's beginning to really take off and you're running aggressive promotions, then you've only got 5 weeks worth of inventory left. Well, actually, if you're going into Christmas and things start to ramp up again, as they will tend to in November, then you might only have 4 or 3 weeks inventory left. So obviously, if your lead time is officially 4 weeks, but could be six, you need to order like today. So be aware that just because you're in a hurry to order inventory, this is the last thing, and this is why you need to reorder soon enough. You need to give yourself a little bit of time to just double check the details and get a pro forma invoice from the supplier that tells you where it's getting delivered, exactly what product model they're giving you. And, you know, just things like getting your EIN number on the invoice, the commercial invoice, I should say, so that if there is a problem with the US Customs, they have the fact that your company is registered as a sort of foreign entity for importing into the USA. And make sure that on your commercial invoice, your name appears with your phone number and your email, so that if there is a mess up at the customs end of things in the USA, that it is possible for them to contact you and for you to simply say, okay, I'll pay the duty. Who do I pay? Get your credit card out and just solve the problem there and then. So little details like that, you've got to allow time to just check the details, especially if you're doing this for the first time. You know, obviously, if you're reordering product, you're reordering for the first time. So you've done the supply chain process once, but, you know, give yourself time to do things properly. Okay. Okay, so the last mistake that I can think of here in specific little details is setting up a shipping plan and activating it without being ready to ship boxes within the next 24 hours. Okay, so UPS is Amazon's partner in shipping both in the USA and in the UK. Basically, when you've got your boxes in your warehouse, or in my case, I've literally got them stacked in the corner of my bedroom at the moment, which is where I'm recording because it's a nice soft furnishing filled environment, which is good for recording. So I'm sitting next to a pile of boxes, two of which are waiting to be collected by UPS today, and they could be ringing any moment as we speak. But I set that up this morning, and they are coming to collect it today. Now, if you set up a shipping plan, so basically in order to do that, you go to your inventory listing. So you go to under Manage Inventory tab, find your listing, click on the checkbox next to it, and then on the Actions menu above it, you scroll down until you find Send/Replenish Inventory, and then Create Shipping Plan. And I've talked about this before in detail, so I'm not going to go into it again. If you need to cover that again, or if you have any questions about that, come to www.amazingfba/ask, amazingfba.com/ask. But basically, once you've set the shipping plan up and you put in all the details of the weight and the dimensions of each carton, plus how many units are coming in, plus whether you or Amazon are doing the FNSKU label side of things, so the barcodes, then you create a shipping plan and you get it to calculate the price for you, and then you click accept. So once you've accepted the charges, which are, by the way, incredibly cheap considering how much weight of stuff you're moving around, I had an 18 kilogram carton with 100 units in it go off yesterday or the day before for £10 to the middle of England. I mean, if I'd tried to send something at the post office of that weight, I don't know how much it would have cost me. But I mean, for comparison, I sent something that was smaller than one of the units off to a relative recently for a present, and that was £3 to arrive the next day. I mean, you know, it's incomparably cheap. Anyway, I digress. But the point is, you have 24 hours within which you can void the charges on that. Otherwise, they will charge you for it. So there's pointless doing that. If that happens, then you just have to, you know, get charged, and that's that, you know. But if you're not going to be in position to do that, then there's no point in setting the shipping plan up. So if you're using FBA inspection, by all means, set the shipping plan up. Go through to the point where it will give you the cost. It will give you a quote, and then don't click on accept charges until the point where you are actually ready within the next 24 hours to ship the boxes. So that's a very simple little point, but that's kind of the end of the supply chain. And after that, you hand over to Amazon, and whoopee, you're finally free of worrying about where your units are. They're in an Amazon warehouse, and Amazon is taking care of them. Hurrah! Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode. I'm sorry it's been a long and not particularly exciting episode, but then that's kind of mirrors the whole sourcing process, really. It's not that exciting necessarily, but there's lots of details. And if you get them right, things go smoothly. If you get them wrong, nothing great happens if you get it right. But if you get it wrong, you suddenly know about it because you've got lots of money tied up in units that are suddenly tied up in US customs, or you've got the wrong type, or your supplier is unhappy, or you're unhappy, or, you know. So it's just one of those things. Go through it, nitty gritty stuff. So sorry it's not exciting. but necessary stuff. Since I think this is a very important area, I've got quite a lot of other mistakes that I've personally made, or one or two that I've come across from other people, which I think are important enough for me to go through, but I'm going to split those off into another episode. So the next episode on this topic will be coming soon, either next episode or after the interview, whichever we can get to happen first. Now, if you are like me, somebody who finds all this stuff rather dreary and a bit worrying and stressful, then you could look into outsourcing this stuff long term. Now, you've got to choose carefully when you outsource, just as carefully as you would choose sourcing your product. You need to choose the person who's going to sourcing your product. But if you can find somebody like that, then they're worth their weight in gold. And in my case, I'm starting to distance myself from wanting to go forward with future products unless it's going to be a very straightforward supply chain, because I want to focus on my very limited time on things like the marketing, customer service, and I need to get more diligent about product research and more imaginative about that as well, and looking for suppliers outside the use of supply chains. So I've got a Chinese guy on board who is a fantastic guy. I'm not going to name him because he hasn't asked to be named or given me permission. But if you are interested, I know that he is looking to work with a few serious-minded Amazon sellers. So if you're interested in that, then drop me an email, michael@amazingfba.com, just to tell you a tiny bit about him. He's basically a Chinese native and native speaker from Shanghai, which is one of those extraordinary Chinese success, or at least expansion stories. It went from 10 million inhabitants, I think about a decade ago, to 20 million now. So the size of London to two Londons in a decade, which is just insane. I mean, that's just exemplifies China. It's that kind of show city to the West, very Western facing. Obviously, tons of exporters and factories are linked to or around that area. He has lived in the UK for several years. He has a degree in procurement. And he works in procurement for, buying and sourcing for a Fortune 500 company, a massive international company. So he's a great guy. I've worked with him personally now on one product, and we've met face to face. So I have implicit trust in him. So if you're interested in working with him, get back to me, and then I can pass you on to him. I can filter things and go through a process. I'm not going to just pass his name on to you. It's not going to be as simple as that, because I need to protect his time. He's very got limited time, and he's working for me as well. So I don't want him to go and get dragged into pointless discussions. But if you are serious about this, and especially if you have a bit of experience or a bit of turnover behind you, so that we've got a bit of credibility to talk to him about, he could be persuaded to work for you and your business. So I hope that could be an exciting and helpful takeoff point for outsourcing. Say on Walt Disney films, that's all, folks. That's all. So there will be more. As I said, I've got a very exciting interview coming up with David, who will be talking about taking off from zero to $5,000 a month in turnover, despite having a young family and a full-time job, which I think is pretty amazing. So as soon as I can schedule that with David, it will be in the next couple of weeks. We've been fighting with diaries to get that to happen. The other thing is that you will get another episode on the details of mistakes that I've made in sourcing, and not outsourcing, I should say, sourcing, supply chain, procurement, whatever you want to call it, getting products from the research stage to the stage where they're manufactured and got over safely through customs over the sea into Amazon warehouses. So that is the next couple of episodes coming up. And as ever, please stay in touch. Go to the Facebook group and join in the discussion, amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. And if you want the Insider Secrets videos, of which there are now five, and I will continue to add to those over time, then go to amazingfba.com/welcome and sign up. If you're already a member of that, then you don't need to sign up for anything. You will get all future videos as soon as they are created. Apart from that, yes, iTunes reviews, don't forget there's a contest. There's a £50 Amazon voucher up for grabs, or $75, whatever the equivalent at that time is, if you're based in the US, or whatever your local currency is if you're based in Europe. And that runs to the end of November, the first 25 reviews, whichever comes first. And actually looks like we might possibly get to the 25 reviews first. So if you are interested in being part of that, then get in there fairly quickly so you don't miss out. And as I said, I will put some instructions on the blog, but most people seem to be finding it fairly straightforward to deal with. So thanks for your time. And as ever, don't forget that imperfect action beats perfect inaction every time. So just remember that you've got to do your research, but then you've got to get out and test things in real life. So it's not a question of being naive and going and plunging feet first without looking. Equally, it's not a question of skepticism or fear and staying on the sidelines and researching but doing nothing. Do your research, and then if need be, place a test order, or you know, do something real that will get you a real result, and then you'll move forward. Good luck, stay in touch, and see you in the next podcast.